Welcome to a new series of We've Been Here Before, the show that believes history is like a big piece of garlic bread. It keeps repeating on you at the most embarrassing moments. Rather pleasingly, this is our second series, so we have indeed been here before. But in an effort to shine a light into the darkest corners of history, we've booked four intellectual giants. Sadly, they've all pulled out of the last minute, leaving us with Giles Brandreth, John O'Farrell, Arabella Weir and Arthur Smith. So eyes backward, please, as we go straight into round one. It's been another grueling week for Tony Blair. But John and Arabella, have a listen to this.
BBC Radio News. We've just heard from our staff at Westminster that the Prime Minister has resigned. He feels he has been leader of the Labour Party for long enough. He will continue as a backbencher.
Right, now that's not Gordon Brown daydreaming. Can you work out either from the voice or the feel from that when that was, who it was?
50s, isn't it?
No, it's not. That's a surprise resignation of a Labour Prime Minister. It's Harold Wilson,
yes,
1976.
Quite right, it's a sudden resignation of Labour Prime Minister Harold Wilson on March the 16th, 1976. While still in office, for reasons which have never been satisfactorily explained. Why did he go?
They always thought there was some sort of scandal that would come out quite soon after, and it never really materialised what
but
did he
not have a thing with Lady Forkbender?
No, he didn't.
But there were rumours at the time, that he was being undermined by MI5. Mm. There were all sorts of grumblings and rumours, but he was actually quite a straightforward and decent guy. Famous, of course, for smoking a pipe.
In private, he smoked cigars. And in private, he smoked. He drank brandy. In public, he'd have a pint and a pipe to show he was a man of the people, Harold.
He was a spin doctor to
He was a spin doctor in the early days.
Don't you reckon Glenda Jackson's the only one who still smokes roll-ups?
To look like a man of the people.
No, Claire Short smokes roll-ups, but they've got different things in them, I think.
Giles has stumbled into an area we wanted you to go into, is the similarities between Tony Blair and Harold Wilson. Can you join him in this quest?
Leader of the Labour Party.
Very good.
We're hoping you think of more and more depth. They both came into becoming leader of the Labour Party because a popular former leader was suddenly died.
Yeah, came in after a long period of Tory rule, sleaze.
Yes, sleaze. I'll give you a point for sleaze.
Came in saying he'd be a big lefty and then immediately sort of disillusioned all
they
the
all
Labour Party
that,
supporters.
They,
that's another similarity.
Hey, and he had a referendum on Europe, which apparently
he did.
Was going to have.
Yes, he did.
They both used to wear trousers at work.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the actual resignation of Harold Wilson is predicted in the Tony Benn diaries. You read the Tony Benn diaries just before 1976, and the drivers in the Westminster carpool say he's going to resign because he's just issued this sort of edict that all prime ministers will have a chauffeur for the rest of their lives, all former prime ministers. And he's obviously going to resign, yes. And that was the first inkling of it. And in fact, they all got one, except Maggie, of course, who opted for the sedan chair carried by Norman Fowler and John Gummer.
Well, now with Harold Wilson, we won the World Cup, didn't we?
We did. It was more with Bobby Moore, but I suppose Harold Wilson...
Because he was really
Harold was playing right back for Huddersfield.
Yes. There was a Wilson in the team, but I think it's a different Wilson. I'm not sure.
I was recently in Huddersfield on tour, and I came out of the railway station, and there I saw the most wonderful statue of Harold Wilson.
Ah, yes.
It's larger than life. He's wearing his sort of flapping Gannex raincoat. He's got a pipe in one hand. He looks quite magnificent.
Yeah, and it was opened in 1999... by Tony Blair, in fact, unveiled it in Huddersfield, and Lady Wilson said of it,
"I think this statue captures Harold's vigour and spirit."
Yes, that was back in the days when he'd stayed in one position all the time while pigeons crapped on his head. You're impressed with this
statue? Impressed. I wonder how quickly it will be before we have a statue of Tony Blair.
Will Tony Blair do the same thing as Harold Wilson and resign?
I am minded to think he will, I have to say. I think that's the way it's going.
Resigning at the sort of height of his powers and saying, "Oh, I've had enough now, I've been in power for
Stepping
10 years
back.
Or whatever it is, and
let..." Well, because you either go out kind of with dignity, don't you, or you kind of, you know, you get shot down.
Well, most people don't go out with dignity. No. This is why we mentioned Harold Wilson is also an exception to the rule, that He apparently went out at some of his choosing. Most of them have to be pulled, kicking,
isn't,
and screaming.
Isn't the idea, yeah, all political careers end in failure? That's the
that's what they say.
I would say that all careers end in failure. That's certainly what it feels like.
Well, life ends in failure. Well, he's not going to resign, I don't reckon. Do you? He's just far too keen. He's like the head boy. He
I'd lay money on him resigning.
Well, I bet he's down in his basement notching up how many days he's done as Prime Minister. He's like a real nerd. As soon as I've overtaken Thatcher.
OK, now, Giles and Arthur, we now go on to what is, strictly speaking, your question. This week, the anti-EU lobby have been hard at work trying to get Britain to say au revoir to all things European. But going back a bit, what's going on here?
Who's got nothing to be smug about? And I would like to say, that 1,500 votes is a derisory total. And Sir James, you can get off back to Mexico knowing your attempt to buy the British political system has failed.
I know who this is, and I'm going to talk this question. This is David Miller in Putney on the 1st of May 1997, saying that the Tories have, saying that the referendum party have tried to buy the political system, as if the 20 million that the Tories had just spent had been raised by old ladies selling jam. Go on, okay, Giles.
Thank you, John. But Giles and Arthur, you would agree with that? That was David Miller.
No, I've decided I don't agree with that at all.
Who do you think it was, Arthur?
I think it was the international model, Jodie Kidd. I've been worried about her. I don't know if you've ever heard of her, Giles.
Why, heard of her? She's a personal friend.
Poor woman. Apparently her polo and fashion business isn't doing very well.
Oh, that's terrible.
Oh, I've been worried. To be honest, that's what I've mainly been worried about this week. Yeah.
Hey, you're quite right. It's the referendum party. You did. Well, they fielded 500 candidates in 1997. Do you know how many got elected?
None.
I don't think any got elected, did they?
Yeah, quite right.
One stood in my constituency.
Yes. He must have been livid that you split his vote.
But the referendum, he really did take it terribly seriously.
He did. Well, the referendum party. The referendum party had this one policy. It was a party with one policy, which was there must be a referendum on the euro. And now Tony Blair has gone, oh, there's going to be a referendum on the euro. And they're sort of struggling to find their place in the British political system.
Well, the UKIP party, which is either the name of a party or just an instruction to everybody who's ever heard about this particular week's election.
But Joan Collins is one of the great political theorists of our time, isn't she? I mean, I'd listen to anything she said, wouldn't you?
Well, they've got quite an array of celebrities.
I know, there's Kilroy's, Jeffrey Boycott. Then there's
He's always a man to back, isn't he, in a
nutty,
hotel room?
Who's that astronomer?
Patrick Moore.
Patrick He's more dead, or less bonkers.
He's dead. Patrick Moore is alive and well.
That's a different radio show.
I think he's interested in cutting down immigration from other countries and indeed from other planets. So that's his...
What do they do, Euro MPs, really? Do you have any idea, Giles?
Yes, I've been there. They collect an awful lot of gravy.
On a train?
on their train.
The first gay character in EastEnders is an MEP.
Really?
Michael Cashman.
Oh, right.
Well, that's the only person to know that.
Can I say, they do have the better-looking candidates.
Yes, Joan Collins, you think, is a...
I do. Joan Collins, Kilroy Silk, Joan Collins. All the colour of...
mutton.
That's very ungallant. She's beautiful. She wears the wig a little bit too far forward on the head. But other than that...
Now, I'm trying to drag it back to the real politics. The Liberals were so worried about the impact of UKIP that they warned people to watch Kilroy. Possibly the first time that phrase has ever been said. OK, well, it's time for our count now, as I award 4 points over to Giles and Arthur. So that means that our total points at the moment are, for John and Arabella, 7 points, and Giles and Arthur have 10 points. So let's move on to our cultural issues round, which can be clearly defined as any stuff we couldn't get into round one. Now, last weekend, we commemorated the Normandy landings when British and Allied forces invaded France. But it wasn't always that way round. John and Arabella, who's this coming over here and invading our patch?
The leaders mutually prepared for battle, each according to their national custom. The French passed the whole night in confessing their sins. The English passed the night in drinking and singing. Then the battle commenced on both sides and was fought with great ardour.
Right, well, that was, as you'll recognise from the accent, that was William of Malmesbury describing the Battle of Hastings, which you know occurred on October the 14th, 1066, when King Harold was beaten by the Normans.
It didn't actually take place at Hastings. Actually, rather coincidentally, happened at a place called Battle. And I think what probably happened was they all landed and the Saxons were coming, the Normans, but there's a sign. Oh, there's a sign there. Look, it says Battle, 2 miles. We'll go down this. This way, lads. They put up signs for us. It's down
there.
You're
nearly right. I think it just reduced the element of surprise. Do you think they'll attack us here?
Big sign.
What do you, John and Arabella, what was the first thing William did when he landed in Sussex?
He stumbled.
He stumbled.
He stumbled and he fell on the ground and he picked up and he said, "See, I already have the soil of England in my hands." But he said it in French.
What would that be then?
All right, go ahead then.
French, yes.
Oh, je suis tombé. Oh, mais, j'ai la terre de l'Angleterre en mes mains.
Oh,
What was William known as before he was known as William the Conqueror?
He was called William the Bastard.
Yeah. Really, in a sense, war in that time in the 11th century was really football hooliganism by another name. Because they were just like, you know, football hooligan gangmeisters, well, these characters.
Exactly. The Saxon army had just come all the way from battle at Stamford Bridge they took on all their Chelsea supporters. Yeah.
What connects the Battle of Hastings to D-Day?
Ah.
Which town connects Battle of Hastings to D-Day?
Bayeux.
Bayeux.
But there is actually a tapestry of the D-Day landings that was made, which I think is even bigger than the Bayeux tapestry.
Yes. What did the D of D-Day stand for,
Charles? It just stood for day.
It didn't stand for the departure, I thought. It was departure.
No, it's D-Mark.
No.
Somebody told me. My dad told me.
Just stood for day.
Day Day.
Oh, no, but Giles is going to say... Well, you were there, Giles, so let's hear what the real reason was.
I understand from the old soldiers that it didn't stand for anything. It didn't stand for deliverance, it didn't stand for departure. It simply was, as it were, the letter D, as in it might have been an Operation H. It could be, it is, the letter
D. The Secretary of State for War had a stammer, so it became...
It wasn't going to be B-Day, was it?
Okay, well, we'll just run him off. William the Conqueror, when he died, his corpse was so bloated that he couldn't fit in his coffin. I think it even exploded. But then, if you've ever eaten in the Harry Ramsden and Hastings, you'll have some idea. Now, from one European conflict to a far more serious one, the England team is in Portugal for Euro 2004, and so are the fans. Giles and Arthur, what's all this aggro?
The police now are mounting a counter-attack. The fans have stayed behind, the Luton fans giving their support as the police charged down into the corner of the ground. The spectators who'd rushed onto the field now turn tail and go back over the barrier that they've broken down. And here comes another wave of police, about 150 police, charging across the ground to try and contain that outbreak.
But Prime Minister's question time. Well, it was clearly some sort of football hooliganism going on. Of course, one could pick so many, really, from the recent history of English...
You might, with a lucky break, you might be able to pick...
That could be... That was... The
well, Luton was mentioned, so there's a clue there, I suppose, as the...
Luton was mentioned.
It was, yes, in the commentary.
Well, it must be Luton v.
Luton, well done. A point there to Arthur. There's a famous match, Luton v. Millwall, in 1985.
They smashed up all the seats, didn't they? All the plastic seats. Oh, and the away fans were banned after that, I seem to remember.
There was a lot of things happened. The government recommended ID cards, but the Chelsea chairman, as he was then, Ken Bates, he proposed a solution. Do you know what that was?
He presented...
String them up.
No, he said... He said electrified fences, I think.
That's right, an electric fence. He proposed an 11-foot barrier of barbed wire with an electric fence on top, similar to the one used to stop cattle from escaping.
There'll also be corporate electric fencing for the posh people, you know.
But this has been kicking around for years, this idea. In 1968, Dr. John Harrington, writing in The Times, suggested...
Building a moat between the spectators and the playing area. Wire fencing interferes with vision. Ditches filled with water may be preferable.
Not a good one to combine, though, the electric fencing and the moat with water. That's doesn't work at all.
I think it's terrible that these fans shame our country in the way that they do. I mean, that's the job of the England football team, isn't it, really, on these tournaments? I've just bought the... I've just bought the PlayStation Euro 2004, which is fantastic. And they say it's just like being at the actual tournament. Mm. And I turned it on, and I got water cannoned by a Lisbon policeman.
Well, of course, they do say there is no football hooliganism when there is a war on.
Well, there's no football on, that's why.
Oh, oh no, but the football goes on. The football, they play on.
Oh, wasn't it Alan Clark who said he thought it was all rather admirable, it showed the British martial spirit or something,
yes,
didn't it? Terrible. I suppose they would, but they were the same people on the battlefield of Agincourt and whatnot, weren't they, probably? There's a whole little movement of men of about my age who sort of have lost interest in football. Indeed, there's a novel out called The Man Who Hated
Football.
Men of
your age have lost interest in most things.
They've lost interest in me, to be honest. But,
So anyway, thank you to Giles and Arthur, who I think made a contribution here and there on that round. So I'll give you 4 points, and it's amazingly at the moment it's 14-14. Well done. I wasn't trying to fiddle that. Just had to come out that's keep you both encouraged. Now on to round three, which always has a theme, as fan of the last series will know. And this week's theme is modern things are rubbish and always have been. John and Arabella, Brit art may have set the world alight, or indeed the other way around, but which group launched their movement with this snappy manifesto declaration?
Ideal. 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 Knowledge. 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 Boom, 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 boom.
Oh, that's the French entry in the Eurovision Song Contest in 1969.
So that's a good and witty and...
yes, thank you.
I think funny answer,
me.
But do you happen to know who said that and in what kind of, what was the manifesto of?
I've absolutely no idea.
Is it Jean Cocteau or someone?
It was Dadaism.
Dadaism. You get 2 points bonus there for Arthur,
yes,
for recognising that.
Dadaism is a great kind of, in a way, comic sort of art movement.
Yes.
In reaction against the traditional world of art, that following the destruction of the First World War, you know, all those great Doris who did very, very weird things, took their clothes off and went, and I am a cauliflower, no sense, kind of just gibbering on, whoop, here and there, oh, like a monkey, bang the table, oh, I'm a cauliflower again, da, 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 Hugo, Ball, Tristan, Zara, thank you very much,
well
good
done.
Night.
Well, okay.
Very good.
Well done, you get another... We've found your area, Arthur.
Well, actually, Arthur and I are really quite... We know quite a lot about this subject. The whole Dada movement, he mentioned there, Zara.
Yes.
There was a Romanian artist called Zara, who
yes.
really was the...
Tristan Zara.
Yeah. He is the man who came up with the word. He opened the dictionary, and he put his thumb in it, and there he saw the word Dada, which means, of course, in French...
Rocking horse.
Hobby horse.
Yeah.
Not a rocker. It was a hobby horse.
And famously, the great event of Dadaism was Marcel Duchamp displaying the urinal, wasn't it?
Indeed. Well, you've got another point there for Marcel Duchamp, and you've got to his most famous work, which was called... Do you happen to know what it's called? It was
the
urinal.
Pissoir.
It was actually called Fountain. Yes.
What's interesting about Dadaism is it really began in 1917, ended in 1922, and they didn't try to keep going with it. It was negative art, and they believed in it bringing it to an end. You know,
yes.
Brit art, you have to burn the building down. In those days, they just realised, no, it's time to shut up shop.
No, you're quite right to bring it up to date, though, because a couple of weeks ago, a warehouse fire destroyed a large collection of contemporary art valued at £50 million, give or take. £50 million. But was that a severe loss?
That was terrible. The fire brigade rushed in and had to spray sort of chemical foam all over a burning canvas. And that particular piece is about to win the Turner Prize, I understand.
Well, it's easy to make mock of these sort of artistic movements, so let's carry on. But
do you know, I was briefly the art critic on Richard and Judy. I was. I was fired after one
day.
I had to go to the Serpentine Gallery and look at minimalist art, which of course didn't have much to it. And I was
that was your review. There's not very much to it.
Well, no, I was meant to sneer at it and say, well, a child of five could do that sort of stuff, and I refused to and was fired, and they've never had an art critic since, I think.
Oh, dear. Well, that's another career down this morning. But the other thought, when we're not being completely philistine about this, is that it's... things are often condemned when they first come along. Sometimes they're received better. Now, we're going on to architecture here with Giles and Arthur. The latest addition to London's skyline is the so-called Gherkin. Now, this had its fair share of criticisms, but what London building is this critic moaning about?
The columns are too gross. The work looks far too heavy, and the lower figures near the level of the eye are too large.
OK, so which building? This is going back a bit, but which building was that?
Oh, it's going to be a wonderful building.
It could be St. Paul's Cathedral.
It's going to be a glorious building. It's not going to be St.
That's
Paul's
Cathedral.
That's a recording. It is St. Paul's Cathedral. It is St. Paul's Cathedral. So another point there for Arthur, who's scoring points hand over foot.
When it comes to scoring, you can't beat Arthur.
But what we read out there was a contemporary criticism of St. Paul's Cathedral, which many people considered the architectural carbuncle of its day. It was repeatedly blocked by opponents, the designs were changed, and Wren was in his 80s before the work was finally completed. He got so fed up with endless criticism that he built a huge wall around the site to stop people looking in and spoiling his work. But then people complained about this wall, saying it was badly constructed.
It only took that long to complete because the builders kept leaving to finish another job elsewhere.
Well, it was the criticism that held it up, but a possible point, yours. But what was on the site? What was he building on the site of?
St. Paul's.
Indeed.
The previous St. Paul's, it was destroyed in the Great Fire of London.
It was destroyed, but it was still a holy building. There was a lot of remains of it there, and this was sensitively removed by Sir Christopher Wren by blowing it up with gunpowder. One eyewitness noted...
One huge piece of stone shot to the opposite side of the churchyard through an open window and into a room of a private house where some women were at work.
After which Wren scratched himself and muttered, "Yeah, I can fix that, but it'll cost you." So do we only like buildings when they've been around for a long time?
Yeah, this is...
Even St. Paul's it wasn't just a bit of...
This goes right back in history. I mean, even when Stonehenge was built, there was like, you know, everyone going, "Oh, it's a waste of Bronze Age lottery money," you know.
Landscape.
Yeah, exactly. Brought the landscape. And the southern England was occupied by the Beaker people at that point. They said that money should have been spent on... Well, beakers, really, that's the main thing. But whatever a building is new, people don't like it. And then in 100 years...
Eiffel Tower. Very unpopular.
When I was a child, everyone went on about how ugly the... what now is the BT building, you know, it used
when
to
be a post child, office. When I was a child, everyone went about how ugly I was.
The only reason was that the
post office tower?
You know, the funny one with the kind of revolving...
Yeah, the revolving restaurant.
But the only reason I remember it so well is because a friend of mine's stepmother, who was much loathed, would say when she caught us doing something we weren't supposed to do and is mildly illegal still, she would say, "Don't think I haven't been in contact with post office tower." And it took us ages to work out what she was saying. We'd think post office tower. She couldn't say pot. So she was spelling it out. So we would think, what, that new building that everybody hates? We had no idea.
Funny.
Obviously, I wasn't.
Upbringing you had.
Amazing. And that's where she got her supplies, didn't she?
Yes, and she said everybody knows it as post office tower because you can't say it in case you're arrested.
God.
I mean, in 100 years' time, we'll be going... carports, or you must preserve that. That's the most precious part of the building. There's bolt-on conservatories. You're saying, well, that's a listed part, grade 2 bolt-on conservatory. And the drive-through McDonald's in Wandsworth One Way system will be an architectural treasure. You know,
it's just,
we'll have sort of a later series of restoration, rebuilding.
Yeah, trying to recreate the big yellow M. You know.
Griff will be there trying to get that M up again.
That's right.
Oh, I think that that round can't be maintained. It's falling down. We'll wait for a restoration. With the points standing at an exciting 19 to Giles and Arthur, and only 15 to John and Arabella. Some great work, I think, from Arthur picking up points as we go along. But this is time for our final quick-fire round. At least it will be quick-fire after some intensive editing. Now we've got some famous historical events, but how would today's media cover them? Abraham Lincoln assassinated.
New York Times, entertaining night out spoilt by tedious opera.
Washington Post, America vows revenge on Saddam.
There is a publication called Sandwich Weekly.
Yes. And, Sandwich Weekly.
Well, I don't think they'd pay any attention to it. They've got other things on their plate.
That's a gag with years and years in the preparation. But now I fear curling up at the edges. Any more possible headlines from... all right. The Spanish Armada defeated.
The Independent. The Spanish Armada defeated.
Good one. Cruel but fair.
Bowls Monthly. Drake triumphant at bowls again.
Yeah.
Sandwich Weekly, cheese and tomato, still the most popular.
Sky Sports, Spain are out of Euro 1588.
The Maidenhead advertiser, Spanish Armada defeated, no Maidenhead people involved.
The Washington Post, America vows revenge on Saddam.
Well, as I say, it's a very quick fire round this. We'll fire that one. The Russian Revolution, big story in its day.
OK Magazine. Tsar Nicholas shows us round his attractive basement.
Socialist worker. Tories out.
Daily Star. Jordan has new boob job. Page 21, Rusky Riot.
Yep. OK, how about going back in time again? Richard III murders princes in the Tower.
Daily Mirror. Police admit royal checks not carried out. Daily Mail. Three murdered princes, commemorative plate.
Sure, the Daily Mirror would have photographs of Richard murdering the princes in the Tower.
Yeah. No, Washington Piers Post. Moment. America vows revenge on Saddam. Oh, that's enough of that joke.
Yeah.
Let's get back to the sandwich.
Sandwich
Weekly, yeah.
You can't get tired of the sandwich jokes.
What about Henry VIII beheads Anne Boleyn?
Oops. That's the star.
The sun would go, she was asking for it.
No, the sun would go with Anne Boleyn, topless.
No, that'd be the star. The star did a fantastic
rib.
Spare rib
would have a
I know this
that.
Is completely supplementary to requirements, but it is very funny. The star.
Hang on, don't make these bold claims in advance.
Well, I thought it.
Will the judge of that, Miss Weir?
When Versace was shot, the Far Show was at the height of its fame, and their headline was "Shoot You, Sir." I thought, for the star.
No, I remember that, odd enough. It was
pretty funny.
Tasteless, though.
Yeah, but right on the money. Yeah.
Sandwich Weekly.
Yes.
Oh, no. Anne Boleyn no longer in position to eat sandwiches.
She just necks them.
But she makes a lovely pig's head.
Yes, loot. Dress for sale, some bloodstains. Now, this, I'm afraid, brings us to the end of the contest. And since I didn't award any points, sadly, for that last round, it means... No criticism, just I didn't have time to. It was so quick and so entertaining. No time to award points. So the end result is that John O'Farrell and Arabella Weir score 15 points. But the winners this week are Giles Brannath and Arthur Smith with 19 points. We've proved once again that history is written by the winners, but this show is written by the losers. But that brings us to the end of the show this week. Until next, this is me, Clive Anderson, saying goodbye. Goodbye.
We've Been Here Before was presented by Clive Anderson. Guests were Giles Brandreth, John O'Farrell, Arabella Weir and Arthur Smith. It was recorded at the Royal Institution of Chartered Surveyors in Westminster. The show was devised and written by Mark Burton and Dan Gaster. The reader was Lewis McLeod and the producer was Ed Morrish.